The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today. From the Capital One Bank studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Year-End Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
This is the second half of the Year-End Roundup, nearly an hour of news and analysis looking back at the biggest stories of 2018. One of those, the Russia probe. Let's go straight to correspondent Stephen Portnoy at the White House to look back at the investigation. Stephen, let's start with one of the most recent developments, the drama that played out in court the day former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was supposed to be sentenced. What happened?
It was Tuesday, December 18th, Stephen. I was actually at the courthouse for the hearing. We expected it to be a brief proceeding where the judge, Emmett Sullivan, would have, we assumed, accepted the recommendation of prosecutors to send Flynn on his way, having admitted he lied to the FBI about talking with the Russian ambassador about sanctions. We expected he would have been given a very light sentence, and that would have been the end of it. But it didn't turn out that way at all. In fact, by the end of it, the judge, Emmett Sullivan, excoriated Flynn, saying that he essentially sold the country out. He suggested that maybe Flynn should have been tried for treason, although he later yanked that back, and he allowed Flynn to ask for a delay in the sentencing until sometime in the spring at the earliest so that he can continue cooperating with prosecutors and get the full credit for that cooperation with Robert Mueller.
Walk us through what's happened to two other key targets in the Russia probe, Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort.
Well, 2018 saw both of those men, the president's one-time campaign chair and his longtime lawyer, pleading guilty to federal crimes. In the case of Paul Manafort, there were two separate cases. The first was a lengthy trial that went on in Northern Virginia, where the special counsel's office accused him of bank fraud and tax fraud. A jury convicted him on several counts. A separate case involving his work for pro-Russian forces in Ukraine wound up resolving itself with a guilty plea. Manafort decided to plead guilty to all of the charges against him. But then prosecutors accused him of lying. How will that be resolved? Well, that'll continue into 2019. The president has said that Paul Manafort is a good man who's been treated unfairly in this process.
It's very sad what's happened to Paul, the way he's being treated. I've never seen anybody treated so poorly.
Separately, and treated very differently by the president, the longtime lawyer Michael Cohen, whom the president has called a rat for his cooperation with prosecutors in New York City and the special counsel.
So very simply, Michael Cohen is lying.
New York prosecutors brought forward charges that Michael Cohen enriched himself with bank fraud and hiding millions from the IRS in his taxicab business and loans he extended. And they also, more importantly to the president, got him on this campaign finance charge, where he admitted that he paid two women or arranged for the payments to two women who say that they had affairs with President Trump. The payments were made in the weeks before the election, and the prosecution got the publisher of the National Enquirer to admit in court papers that it knowingly made these payments, at least to one former Playboy playmate, Karen McDougal, for the benefit of candidate Trump. Now, the president has insisted that it wasn't a violation of campaign finance law, but Cohen admits it was. The National Enquirer's publisher admits it was. Federal prosecutors insisted it was, and a federal judge agreed that it was.
The special counsel's investigation also led to indictments of Russians accused of interfering with the 2016 presidential election.
And by the end of the year, we saw a report that was prepared for Senate investigators that really shone a big bright spotlight on this Russian effort run out of the St. Petersburg troll farm that's known as the Internet Research Agency. And what it depicted by the middle of December of this year was how conservatives were targeted by graphical memes, that is what they're called, that tried to motivate them to support Donald Trump. And most interestingly, they targeted African-American voters with a voter suppression effort to try to convince them that their votes would be useless and that both major party candidates, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, would oppress blacks.
CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy watching developments in the Russia probe from the White House. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet.
Let's break down the year for the president with Face the Nation host Margaret Brennan. Margaret, let's start with that Russia probe. What has the impact of this long-running investigation been on the White House and on the country?
Well, it has undoubtedly become a distraction for the president. You see how much he publicly talks about this on his own Twitter feed. That's a reflection of where his head is at. So clearly, the president spends a lot of time and emotional energy on it. In terms of the legislation for those on Capitol Hill who have the letter R next to their name, they try to pretend the thing doesn't exist, try to push forward with their legislative agenda and try to work with the White House on that. Sometimes they're not on the same page as the president when it comes to the focus on policymaking. Where this heads next, that unknown, is something that weighs on those who work around the president in a legal capacity. In terms of those who work at the White House, they try to chug along and pretend it doesn't exist and accept what the president says in terms of witch hunt.
How much more of a White House staff shakeup do you think we should be expecting?
This far into an administration, you do see shakeups. That is standard. The churn we've seen up to this point is unprecedented.
Nikki will be leaving.
One session's left. What I did, very simply, is take a man who worked for Sessions.
John Kelly will be leaving, but I don't know if I can say retiring, but he's a great guy. John Kelly will be leaving.
But we were told before we even had the Thanksgiving holiday to expect more changes in staffing around this time. Does that mean that key cabinet members like Mike Pompeo or Jim Mattis are walking out the door, something that would really shake people to their core in terms of understanding the national security direction of this country? No, we haven't heard that yet. Jim Mattis, the defense secretary, who had been almost publicly tweaked by the president when he told 60 Minutes he thinks he's actually really a Democrat, not praised from Republican president, seems to be chugging along in his role, keeping his head down, not publicly challenging the president, but working quietly behind the scenes. Something like that would really shake up the Republican establishment if he was pushed out.
What else should we be expecting for the White House in 2019?
On the national security front, you should continue to watch Latin America, not just the border issue and concerns about forging better relations with this populist who was just elected leader of Mexico, AMLO, as he's referred to, but look farther south. Venezuela, a lot of instability there. Refugees pouring into the surrounding countries. You've had President Trump and some Republican allies, or sometime ally, I should say, Marco Rubio, Florida, spending a lot of time talking about how they want to really challenge the Maduro government. At the beginning of the year, there's going to be the likelihood of more sanctions from the Trump administration and from other countries. That's an immediate area to watch.
CBS News Face the Nation host Margaret Brennan on the Year-End Roundup. Thanks, Margaret.
Thanks.
Stay with us for a lot more. Our next subjects, foreign policy and Brexit.
Time is ticking. Brexit Day is the 29th of March.
On the CBS News Year-End Roundup.
On the CBS News Year-End Roundup. A special program recapping 2018. Here's Steve Dorsey.
The Senate has rebuked Saudi Arabia, passing resolutions to withdraw U.S. involvement in a Saudi-led war in Yemen and holding the country's crown prince responsible for the brutal death of a Saudi Washington Post writer. It comes as the U.S. reshapes its defense strategy with Secretary Mattis on his way out. Correspondent Cammie McCormick remembers that and the year's other foreign policy news.
The murder of dissident and writer Jamal Khashoggi stunned the world.
The Saudi version of events leaves many questions unanswered.
Many in Congress pointed the finger at the Saudi crown prince.
This guy is a wrecking ball.
President Trump insisted the Saudis are allies, partly needed to contain Iran. He also pulled the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal.
When I make promises, I keep them.
President Trump announced he was ordering American forces out of Syria. Earlier, the U.S. launched airstrikes against the Syrian regime for targeting civilians.
Did a chemical weapons attack happen? Yes.
In Afghanistan, the violence spiked despite the president's new strategy. The White House then called for a drawdown there. Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Staying overseas, it's been a turbulent year for the U.K. and parts of Western Europe. Let's talk with correspondent Vicky Barker in London. Vicky, what's the sticking point for British lawmakers over Brexit?
Well, how many British lawmakers are there? And that's about as many sticking points as they are. And that is the big problem, Steve. The problem is that about 52% of the British people voted for Brexit 2 years ago. But you don't have a majority for Brexit in Britain's parliament. And within that parliament, there's basically no majority for any of the scenarios on offer or any of the scenarios being talked about.
So what's the next milestone in this political process?
Well, the next milestone or stumbling block, depending on how you look at it, is Theresa May's commitment, the prime minister promising having postponed the meaningful vote in parliament on the deal that she struck with 27 other EU leaders.
If we went ahead and held the vote tomorrow, the deal would be rejected by a significant margin. We will therefore defer the vote.
She says that debate on that will now begin the week of January 7th when lawmakers return from their Christmas recess, and that there will be a vote sometime the week of January 14th. Now, that vote is almost certain to fail.
And time's ticking on whether or not Britain can actually reach a deal.
Time is ticking. Brexit Day is the 29th of March, 2019. If there isn't a plan B, and EU leaders have made it clear there is no plan B short of canceling Brexit, then what happens on March 29th is that Britain crashes out of the EU.
And what's that look like?
Well, depending on who you talk to, some people say, oh, it's going to be just like the millennium bug. Remember, everybody was predicting total computer cataclysm, you know, at the stroke of midnight in the year 2000 because all the computers are programmed the wrong way and absolutely nothing happened. But others are saying, no, it actually is going to be cataclysm. And a lot of those people who are the most apocalyptic are the ones who are experts in trade and economics. They say that the UK falling out of a trade relationship with the EU with no other meaningful trade relationships in place to replace them without agreements on, for instance, whether planes can take off and land, whether medicines can be shipped from Europe into the UK without having to be stopped at customs. You know, all of that, you know, still hasn't been set, and we could be seeing total physical, economic, and political gridlock.
2018 also saw another big story in the UK. That was that nerve agent poisoning against a former Russian spy in Salisbury near London.
This is being treated as a major incident involving attempted murder by administration of a nerve agent.
Remind us what happened and the fallout from that.
It was Sunday, March 4th, and there was something about the couple that was slumped on that park bench. The first responders have since said they could tell this was not the usual suspects. This was not the usual homeless or down and out, you know, passed out on a park bench. These people looked a lot more respectable. In fact, when they looked in the wallets for ID, this was Sergei Skripal, a former Russian spy who was came to the UK in an exchange, and his 33-year-old daughter, Yulia, it quickly became apparent that they had ingested a nerve agent called Novichok, which is a military-grade nerve agent, which was traced to the Soviet military before the fall of communism.
And what was the response from Russia?
Russia continues to deny any kind of involvement in this. But in fact, the incident sparked a series of tit-for-tat diplomatic expulsions.
And there was one moment where apparently, some leftover Novichok did end up killing someone.
This was the tragic epilogue to the Skripal story. About 3 or 4 months later in June, a woman named Dawn Sturgis and her partner, Charlie Rowley, now one of them homeless, the other living in a homeless hostel, were exposed to Novichok. He apparently found what looked like a bottle of perfume. He gave it to her as a gift. She sprayed it on her and she died. He survived, but says that his health is permanently ruined.
And finally, Vicky, across the channel in France, there has been end-of-the-year upheaval with protests across Paris. What's going on?
The Gilets Jaunes, the yellow vest protesters. Now, this has been a genuine grassroots movement. Thousands and thousands of French people absolutely furious, nominally at President Emmanuel Macron's plans to put a tax on fuels, but tens of thousands of French people who rely on fuel for their livelihoods, people who were barely making ends meet without having to pay the extra, just said they had enough. Also, pensioners saying that these austerity measures by Macron had just brought them to the brink. And tens of thousands began showing up at Saturday demonstrations. Macron first tried to crack down, but finally he did give way. He scrapped the highly unpopular fuel tax rise, and he also promised an extra, roughly a little over $100 a month for minimum wage earners and for pensioners. That seems to have taken a lot of the wind out of the sails of the Gilets Jaunes, the yellow vest movements. The protests have been a lot smaller since then, but I think the social and economic issues bubbling away aren't going to go away just like that.
CBS News correspondent Vicky Barker in London. Enjoy your holidays, Vicky.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Stay tuned. Just ahead.
2018, a year the weather was so punishing, it almost felt biblical.
On the CBS News Year-End Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. From the Capital One Bank Studios at the CBS News Washington Bureau, this is the Year-End Roundup with Steve Dorsey.
Gun violence continues to make headlines no matter the year. More from CBS News correspondent Jim Corsula.
Gunfire brought death to the most ordinary of places across America this past year.
A student down
in Parkland, Florida, Santa Fe, Texas, and more than a dozen other cities, schools came under siege.
I shouldn't be going through this at my school.
In Pittsburgh, the sanctuary of a synagogue was violated.
The deadliest attack on Jewish Americans in U.S. history.
Bloodshed at a Florida video game tournament, a Tennessee Waffle House, a bar in Thousand Oaks, California. A newspaper in Annapolis became a killing field.
Police say the suspect threatened the Capital Gazette a few hours before the shooting.
Not one more! Not one more!
Not even the chance of teenagers nationwide were enough to convince Congress to change gun laws. Meanwhile, the printing of 3D guns only complicated the debate.
The firearms will be all plastic and untraceable.
Perhaps the only thing that is certain, more funerals are to come. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
Severe weather also dominated 2018. Here's correspondent Peter King in Orlando.
2018, a year the weather was so punishing, it almost felt biblical. Tropical storms and hurricanes, most significantly, Florence and Michael.
There's no preparing for something like that.
I'm amazed. I've never seen this kind of damage here.
While out west, wildfires carpet-bombed California towns off the map.
Oh, my God.
Millions across the country were swamped by floodwaters.
The water was up to the ceiling.
Yeah, and then some, it looks like.
In Hawaii, some prayed to an ancient goddess for protection from Mount Kilauea.
At times, it was blasting lava up to 250 feet into the air.
Then came winter and record lows, even in the deep south.
It's pretty wild. I've never seen palm trees with snow on them.
What's behind Mother Nature's madness? A UN study carried a stark warning about climate change.
The world has little more than a decade to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere, or it may be too late.
Peter King, CBS News.
CBS News correspondent Mark Phillips has his eye on the world from London, where he's tracking climate change and the environment. Mark, we've got increasing levels of carbon in the Earth's atmosphere. what are scientists now forecasting for our future?
If things continue as they are, the likelihood is that the warming will be in the range of 3 to 4 degrees at a minimum. Unless the scientists say that warming can be reduced, then all of the various disastrous scenarios in terms of raising sea levels, increasing droughts and famines are inevitable.
Well, we've got all these dire warnings from the United Nations about climate change. What is taking us so long to do something about it?
It's difficult to get governments to think in long-term periods such as that, and that's the problem that that the world is facing, and particularly it's facing because of the lack of interest in pursuing these ambitions that's coming from the administration in Washington, which attended the last conference that the UN held, this one at Katowice in Poland, promoting the continued use of coal, which of course is one of the filthiest fuels around, the end of the use of which the environmentalists say is absolutely necessary if we're to preserve a planet anything like the one we have now.
Fighting for our own future. CBS News correspondent Mark Phillips in London. Thank you, Mark.
My pleasure.
Let's talk now with CBS News foreign affairs analyst Pam Falk at the United Nations. Pam, let's start with that new U.S. ambassador to the U.N. nominee, Heather Nauert. What challenges do you think she faces?
She faces very important challenges and very consequential challenges because the UN is stymied on some of the biggest issues in the world, and the United States and Russia are not agreeing on much at the United Nations. So she has to face a UN that not only is stymied, but it comes at a time when the Trump administration has cut funding of many programs and withdrawn from several international agreements. So all of that is something she will have to face and still try to balance a good relationship for the areas where the United States does want cooperation.
How could she do that, though, if she has no political or policy-making experience, only having worked at Fox News as a correspondent and then at the State Department as a spokesperson?
She will be coming to the United Nations in an unusual position. Most of the U.S. ambassadors to the U.N. have come with some experience. Ambassador Haley came as a former governor. But she comes with the experience of being the spokesperson for the State Department, and so she is familiar with the issues. She just doesn't come with foreign policy, per se, experience. And so I think that will be a big challenge. It will also be a challenge to deal with diplomats. That's something that takes a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of experience. But I think that's where we'll see at the confirmation hearings if she defends herself well and comports herself well on trying to explain how she will get what the United States wants at a time when the U.S. has pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreements, the Global Compact on Migration, and several other U.N. agencies.
Was Nikki Haley an effective ambassador to the U.N.?
Absolutely. She has been a very effective U.N. ambassador, and she spoke with the authority of the president because she was at cabinet level. And that was perceived by diplomats. And so she made strides in many areas. She has been absolutely tough on trying to bring the U.N. around to not be, especially the General Assembly, not be so anti-Israel. She has been very successful on North Korea negotiations and nuclear weapons negotiations, less so as the world is less so on Syria and the crisis in Yemen, but that's still an open book. She took up the position at a very rough time for the United Nations, but her travels around the world, her personal diplomacy has really paid off, and she's been very effective.
Looking back at the year for the U.S. at the U.N., has the country been leaning into the world at the U.N., or is it retreating?
Oh, it's absolutely retreating. And that's going to take either the next president and the next UN ambassador a lot of time to try to recoup, because the world is perceiving that the United States is retreating from a multilateral approach and just going it alone. And that's very difficult when it comes to migration. It's difficult and perhaps much less successful when it comes to climate.
CBS News foreign affairs analyst Pam Falk on the year-end roundup. Thanks, Pam.
Absolutely, Steve. Good to be here.
Coming up on the year-end roundup.
Many Israelis celebrated President Trump's decision to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Many Palestinians, however, were infuriated by it. And
follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey. And this is the CBS News year-end roundup.
On the CBS News year-end roundup, a special program recapping 2018. Here's Steve Dorsey.
The priest abuse crisis deepened in the Catholic Church in 2018, especially right here in the U.S., as correspondent Sam Litzinger reports from Washington.
Pope Francis and his church face a crisis. The sexual abuse of children by Roman Catholic priests and other church officials. Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro announced that a grand jury concluded 301 priests had been abusers for years while being protected by the church.
The weaponization of faith.
Investigations by other states and the Department of Justice are underway. Vatican spokesman Greg Burke.
The Holy See condemns sexual abuse of minors.
Which to abuse survivors like Sean Doherty didn't mean much.
More of the same.
Some church officials are gone because of the sex abuse scandal and cover-up.
Cardinal Theodore McCarrick has submitted his resignation.
Pope Francis has accepted Cardinal Donald Wuerl's resignation.
CBS's Sabina Castelfranco in Rome.
The Pope condemned the atrocities of child sexual abuse. He described the heart-wrenching pain of victims and acknowledged that the church community did not act in a timely manner.
The abuse scandal is sure to make much more news in the new year.
The Pope called for top bishops to attend a summit at the Vatican in February.
Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
Let's talk more about the Catholic Church's response to this and other stories around the Mediterranean with CBS News correspondent Seth Doan, based in Rome. What challenges has Pope Francis been facing with reforming the Catholic Church?
Well, the reforms have really been overshadowed this year by this sex abuse scandal. There has been a real rift in the church. Of course, Pope Francis is on the more liberal side of the equation, and you have conservatives who have been within the church at the very highest levels, cardinals and such, who have been very frustrated with Pope Francis for a number of years. So we've been looking at this rift, this conservative-liberal rift in the church, but it really came to a head this year when that Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano issued that letter in August, which, among a number of other things, said that he had had a conversation with Pope Francis, had warned him back in 2013 about Cardinal Theodore McCarrick and the alleged sex abuse issues that he had, some dating back decades. This letter really rocked the church and put the sex abuse scandal on the front pages.
Seth, another story that you followed closely that also touched on religion was the U.S. decision to move its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Of course, many Israelis celebrated President Trump's decision to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Many Palestinians, however, were infuriated by it.
Have we seen many other countries around the world follow suit?
We've seen a couple of other countries follow suit, and we've heard of another country, Australia, reportedly pondering a move. We saw right in that same month this embassy move happened in May, and we saw Guatemala and Paraguay move their embassy. But then about 3 months later, Paraguay moved its embassy back to Tel Aviv to the dismay of the Israelis.
I also want to talk to you, Seth, about your reporting throughout Italy, where the country's been dealing with some wild weather.
Absolutely wild weather. We've seen a number of deaths across the country, from Sicily in the south to the north, and those pictures in Venice were really quite stunning. You saw people sitting out at those tables that they have usually, where you're sitting in a wide-open, beautiful St. Peter's Square, but they were submerged. So Venice, of course, has had an issue with flooding for years, and there's a major project underway to try to prevent some of that dramatic flooding that happens. But a combination of tides and the moon and the weather here made that flooding in Venice absolutely atrocious, historic for some number of years. And yes, we were seeing a bad really bad weather through a lot of the fall. And in the summer, of course, once again, we had those heat waves. And you had people pointing to the issue of climate change, creating this great fluctuation of weather and extreme wildfires and such, which we covered in Greece. But that heat certainly hit us here in Rome this summer.
Seth, now something a little lighter or stronger, however you like it, coffee, with the arrival of Starbucks in Italy. What's the big deal?
The big deal, well, Starbucks is now here in Italy. This, of course, is where Howard Schultz first had his idea for expanding Starbucks, best what it was, selling beans and such, into this idea of these cafes where people would sit and talk. But for all of those years, there were none in Italy. That changed in September when this Reserve Roastery opened in a beautiful old building in the center of Milan.
I walked the streets here in 83, and to think I could come back here after all these years and open up the roastery in the heart of Milan, and the response, people are banging on the door to get in.
Some things are a little bit different. They don't have some of the more American things, the Frappuccino you don't find on the list. They did import, though, American pricing. A small cappuccino is around €5, which in the coffee shop at the bottom of my house here, I can get a cappuccino for €1.20. So the question is, wow, would Italians really pay that much more for this Starbucks experience? Starbucks is now planning to open more small, you know, what you envision when you know of Starbucks, what we see in the U.S. They'll be opening more of those. They've already opened two in Milan. There are plans to open between 10 and 15 per year. Of course, this is news that has not been welcomed by the tens, hundreds of thousands of bar owners, these small coffee shops around Italy, who many of them are a little concerned that Starbucks could chip into their business.
Keeping us alert and wired to news across Italy and the Mediterranean, CBS News correspondent Seth Doan in Rome, Italy. Buon Natale, Seth.
Ah, buon Natale, anche te. Merry Christmas.
Back home, folks were glued to the dramatic trials of Bill Cosby, a man convicted of molesting gymnasts, the Farmer Bro, and others. Here's correspondent Matt Piper.
The man known as America's Dad became the first high-profile conviction of the Me Too era, the DA who prosecuted him for sex assault declaring,
"Finally, Bill Cosby has been unmasked."
A judge told former USA Gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar that it was her honor to sentence him for abusing hundreds of young female athletes.
"Sir, you do not deserve to walk outside of a prison ever again."
For the first time in nearly 50 years, a Chicago police officer was found guilty of murder in an on-duty shooting.
Jason Van Dyke was convicted of second-degree murder in the 2014 killing of Laquan McDonald.
Martin Shkreli, already infamous as a pharmaceutical CEO, convicted for cheating hedge fund investors out of millions.
The judge gave him 7 years in prison.
In Charlottesville, Virginia.
"We don't stand for this type of hate."
Reaction after the neo-Nazi who drove into a crowd of demonstrators in 2017 was convicted of murder and other charges. And Colorado dad Christopher Watts sentenced to life for killing his pregnant wife and two daughters, his father-in-law saying in court,
"You disgust me."
Matt Piper, CBS News.
We have a lot more coming up to remind you of the major events of 2018, including the year in transportation disasters.
Many Americans learned a new word in 2018, hotophobia, fear of traveling.
On the CBS News Year-End Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. He has keys to the universe.
Actually, it's a key fob.
Right. You have a fob to the universe. Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Year-End Roundup, a special program recapping 2018. Here's Steve Dorsey.
From the roads to the skies, tragedies marked the year in transportation. Here's correspondent Steve Kathan.
It was the deadliest transportation accident in the U.S. in nearly a decade, a New York limousine wreck.
20 fatalities is just horrific.
Uber temporarily put the brakes on road-testing self-driving cars after one killed a pedestrian in Arizona.
Our investigation did not show there were significant signs of the vehicle slowing down.
An Amtrak train going down the wrong track in South Carolina collided with a freight train.
It was bodies everywhere.
17 died when an amphibious tour boat sank in a Missouri lake.
I never want to be on any boat ever again in my life.
And nightmare in the skies. An engine blowout aboard a Southwest Airlines flight shattered a window, partially sucking out a passenger who later died.
Is your airplane physically on fire?
No, it's not on fire, but part of it's missing.
All 189 on board an Indonesian jet died when it plunged into the Java Sea.
This is the first accident involving a Boeing 737 MAX jet.
Many Americans learned a new word in 2018, hotophobia, fear of traveling. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Well, if 2018 didn't scare you away from a vacation yet, there's plenty of deals to be had around the world.
Book now and save big.
Expedia introduces Add-on Advantage, a new way to save on travel.
Experience the Viking difference. You'll enjoy an incomparable value and memories.
CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg has been watching how 2018 shaped up as a year for travel. Let's start, Peter, with destinations. Which destinations have we been seeing more folks around the world interested in visiting?
Well, 2018 was very much like 2017. Iceland was hot. Portugal was hot. South America was getting hotter because of the value of the U.S. dollar. And of course, if you look around the world, what do you see? The U.S. dollar being strong against the British pound, against the euro, and in Asia, against other currencies like the Thai baht. So wherever the dollar was strong, that's where Americans were going.
Let's talk about safety, Peter.
There are two issues of safety here: personal safety, and then terrorism and terrorist acts. And in terms of terrorism and terrorist acts, it's been a relatively safe year for Americans, and they're going where they themselves have done their homework and feel safe. And in an overwhelming number of cases, they're going to be safe.
Meanwhile, hotels, Peter, are trying to make it safer for maids and service workers to do their jobs. What have they been doing?
Well, in the wake of the terrible Mandalay Bay shooting in Las Vegas last October 2017, a number of hotels are giving their frontline workers, the people who have contact with the public, whether they're bellmen or maids, the ability to communicate better. So the maids are now being given, in many housekeeping departments, panic buttons, so that if they see something that alerts them to a problem or they think there's a problem, they can hit that button right away and help is on the way. More and more hotels are going to that, but what the hotels haven't done yet is a better job of perimeter security. And that is, they're not inspecting any of the bags that are coming into the hotels. It's basically they're not doing what the airports are doing. And let's face it, there's not a bellman that I know that wouldn't accept a $5 tip to take my bag to my room without regard to what's in it. And I think we're going to get to a point sooner rather than later where when you check into a hotel in the year 2019, more and more will go and scan those bags before they ever get to your room.
Peter, I also want to talk about airlines now. Have we reached peak travel discounts with airfares like we've been seeing in the past, especially when there was extremely low gas prices? Are those days numbered?
For the moment, the days are not numbered because it's less to do with gas prices, although we always like to know when they go down, than it has to do with how many foreigners are not coming to the United States. There's an actual correlation there between the perception of America as being unwelcoming, inhospitable, and closed due to the optics of many Trump administration policies, real or not, and the actual cost of your airline ticket. Because when you think about it, what would have been a foreign traveler's return ticket home now becomes our outbound ticket there. And as a result, what's really on sale now is not just domestic tickets, it's tickets overseas on an annual basis. There's no seasonality anymore. 2019 is shaping up into being a buyer's market for Americans going overseas if they want to.
What about, you mentioned overseas, Peter, what about those ultra-low-cost airlines offering bargain basement trips to places like Iceland that you mentioned earlier, other places in Europe? We've seen some pull back on some destinations. Do they have a future?
Well, they have a future, but the real challenge for any low-cost airline is when they try to expand too fast. That's what happened with WOW, the Icelandic airline.
Dear guest,
Welcome aboard this WOW Air tutorial on how our promo code...
There's another airline there called Iceland Air. They go back about 60 years, but the new airline, WOW, was expanding to so many different markets, and they really couldn't compete when gas prices started to go up. Norwegian Air, they are a great discount carrier flying brand new 787 Dreamliners, but again, they've expanded rapidly, and there is the rumor on the street that they could get bought by the parent company of British Air. And if that happens, I doubt seriously that British Airways is going to operate them as a discount carrier.
Finally, Peter, what are you looking at in 2019? What's on the horizons? What are you most interested in?
Well, let's start with the bad news first. We are living in the home of the brave and the land of the fee. Airlines are reaping billions of dollars every year and more every year on basically ancillary fees, the checked bag fees, the ticket change fees, the penalty fees, you name it. And the public has gotten used to it, and which is too bad because nobody's fighting back and they're paying it. So what people need to realize is that that original fare that you see quoted online is not going to be the fare you're going to pay if you want to check a bag or change an itinerary or do everything short of breathing. And that's going to continue. And then the hotels are going to follow the airline's lead. You're going to see, you know, early checkout fees and resort fees being charged by urban hotels. You know why? Because they can. So we're living in a world where everybody wants to be competitive on rate, but they're not being competitive on value. So that is the bad news for 2019. The good news for 2019 is not in the airline business. It's in the cruise ship business.
Need a little more wow in your life? Just book a Royal Caribbean cruise by February.
You're seeing every shipyard in the world operating at 100% capacity. They're building more and bigger ships of every size and pedigree, which means a lot of excess capacity. And you're seeing so many new ships hit the market, going to so many new and different ports that are actually exciting, that you're going to see a price war that will continue throughout the year of 2019, with week-long trips on cruise lines being as low as $349. And if you do the math, you can't afford to wake up in Cleveland for $349 a week.
Bargains on the horizon in the new year. CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg looking at the year in travel.
If you're not near radio, listen to us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. The Year-End Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor, and I'm Steve Dorsey.